Hi, everyone. This is Kristen Paulson with the Center for Improving Value in Healthcare. And I am here today with Heidi Baskfield and Dr. David Keller from Children's Hospital Colorado. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Do you want to take a second and just introduce yourself so everyone knows who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm Heidi Baskfield. I'm currently the Vice President of Population Health and Advocacy here at Children's Hospital.
And I'm David Keller. I am the Vice Chair for Clinical Strategy and Transformation in the Department of Pediatrics at Children's Hospital. And the two of us were champions, I think was the title, for the this thing called the CARE Award, which stands for Coordinating All Resources Effectively. It was a project funded by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, a three-year innovation award in collaboration with nine other children's hospitals around the country, and we got to be one of them. 10 other children's hospitals around the country, and we got to be one of them. And we finished that. A big chunk of that award was working with data provided by Civic, which is, I think, why we were invited to join you today.
Thanks for that brief introduction there. And you guys were really brought into this conversation because of some of the amazing work that Children's does. The fact that we are able to support you with our data is kind of just icing on the cake. Could you guys talk a little bit about sort of what the goals of the CARE project were and what that looked like at Children's Hospital?
Sure. So the overarching reason for engaging in this work actually started in a policy and political space, as so many of these projects do. I think many of us remember a series of conversations at the federal level about debt ceilings and budget cliffs and things of that nature. And from the perspective of children's hospitals, what we quickly realized is that our core competency, one of the best things that we do, is managing the care of our chronically complex, our most vulnerable, which just so happened to be our most expensive with respect to healthcare services in the pediatric space. And as a result of the national dialogue going on around budgets and budget cuts and implications for Medicaid, children's hospitals felt like it was very important to be able to take on the management of the chronically complex in a different way that not only improved care, but did all of our favorite things within the triple aim. Obviously, one of the more important for purposes of this project being bending the cost curve as well. And so really, we came together to work on a CMMI submission that would allow us to demonstrate that instead of looking at across the board cuts to Medicaid and things of that nature, that if you let children's hospitals work with their partners in the community, that we could come up with a strategy that would be more effective in demonstrating cost savings to an increasingly expensive system of care.
Great. And sort of what did that project look like on the ground when you were at the hospital?
Yeah. So, it took on a different shape at each one of the 10 hospitals. And that was one of the interesting things about this. We pretty quickly realized that we all function in different environments and with different levels of partnership with our state Medicaid agencies. The good news is we have a good partnership with our state Medicaid agency. So we were able to use data in thinking about how to construct this project. We needed a children's hospital, which we had, and our children's hospital has a very robust complex care clinic. It's called Special Care Clinic here, that provides primary care for about 1,500 kids who are medically complex and provides consultation care to people in the community for about another 1,500 kids. So we had a pretty robust program going on here, but we knew that it wasn't enough. We didn't know how much of it wasn't enough until we started looking at some of the data. And we actually partnered with Colorado Access, which was running our regional coordinated care organization, our RICO, in RICOs 3 and 5. And they were able to identify for us a number of other practices in our area, five of them, that already had large populations of medically complex kids. And so we invited them to work with us to develop a change package to improve the quality of care for those kids. So that was what it looked like on the ground, was a network of five primary care practices plus our special care clinic working together to establish a common set of protocols for working with the medically complex kids, with a heavy focus on care coordination. Each office needed to hire or designate a care coordinator who was going to be primarily responsible for managing, you know, for ensuring that all the different moving parts of these kids' care got taken care of and addressed. And we had a local learning collaborative where we shared best practices on how to support families in caring for the kids. I probably should spend a little time telling you who these kids were, because I think Heidi said earlier they were defined through this clinical risk grouper, again, data-driven. We were fortunate that HCPCS, that Medicaid in this state, was already using that same clinical risk grouper, the one that was chosen by the Children's Hospital Association to use in all of the different sites. And so we had some familiarity with it, and we were able to identify the complex kids. But what the grouper does is put a risk score and essentially categorize the children, or actually it categorizes adults and children, but we were looking specifically at the children, into nine categories. And we're talking about categories 5B through 9, the top five of those categories. For example, a level 6 child, and I actually pulled this from a real case, might be a kid who has persistent asthma, chronic rhinitis, snoring, recurrent otitis media, developmental delay, and obesity. So it's a whole lot of different problems, but none of them were imminently life-threatening, I think is how I think of that. But these are, you know, managing all of those things is kind of a full-time job. Actually, managing any child is a full-time job, but for those of you who are parents would know that. But it's, that's the kind of kid that level 6 is. A level 9 kid is much more complex than that. It's, say, a 10-year-old male with cerebral palsy, a seizure disorder, dislocation of the hip, a single functioning kidney who's fed through a G-tube and is on a CPAP machine at night, and has chronic poor weight gain and constipation and difficulty with feeding and so forth. So those would be an example of the sort of the high end of these kids, the much more complex ones. And we were trying to establish a system of care for all of those kids. We had five elements to our change package. The first one was setting up a local registry to identify all the kids in your practice. And then we wanted you to develop systematically and identify who's on the care team that's taking care of the kids and list them all. You'd be surprised how many people didn't know who else was taking care of this child, and that act of organization was in some ways revolutionary. And then getting a consistent care plan with patient and family-centered goals as to what is the goal of care for these kids. An access plan, how do you access the different aspects of your care team? And then a clear discussion of kind of who's in charge of what, so that the parents and families would know who they were going to talk to about which parts of their problem. And each of those things sounds pretty basic, but doing them in a systematic way across the system really did improve. Well, the thing we found is it really did improve the quality of care that these kids received, and both at our center and out in the community.
Great. Sounds like these were some very challenging children to try to coordinate care for. Can you guys talk a little bit about what some of your outcomes were and really what you were even measuring to see if this is a successful way to improve care for these children?
I'm pointing to Dr. Keller. I leave all the hard stuff to him.
Yeah. Well, so the good thing, the good news was because this was an innovation award, we had the resources to measure a lot of things, and we did. Some of it was internal measurement. We track these kids within our system around ED utilization and hospitalizations, looking at how many times they were admitted and lengths of stay and stuff. That was the easy stuff. The fun bit isn't done yet, and that's where you guys came in, is we really wanted to look at total cost of care. I think this is the first project we've ever done where we were looking specifically at total cost of care as an outcome, which was kind of exciting. And we could get that because you have the total cost of care data, to be able to tell us that. So we got some, and the challenge with that is, of course, these children are all on Medicaid, and there's been that little glitch in the Medicaid data over the last year. So we're waiting anxiously. We know we just got the data from you at the end of March to do the what happened at the end of the project analysis. We haven't seen that yet because it's not done yet. But we're hoping that we'll see some of that. But having that, being able to look at cost data was really helpful. And then we did two kinds of surveys. We surveyed the families using a number of standardized instruments, looking at their total experience of care and access to care and things like that. And we actually also looked at their quality of life. We did a quality of life scale with the families as well. And then we looked at the provider experience a couple of ways. We surveyed the care teams that were actually working on these projects to get a sense of the fourth part of the triple aim, how much of this was stressing out the system to put them through all of this work. So we really had pretty robust outcomes. The short answer is ED utilization went down a little bit. Hospitalizations went down a lot. Total cost of care, we don't know yet. Family experience got better. And the providers and staff were a little stressed, but not too stressed. And they improved their perception of themselves as medical homes. So that's kind of the short answer to the long question. I can talk more about that later.
The other thing I would add that Dr. Keller had the foresight in designing kind of the partner network for the purposes of this project. One, it was surprising to us how many other practices were serving large numbers of chronically complex. Children's often finds itself in the space where it thinks it always has the most when it comes to numbers of serving these kids. And what we found out was there were a lot of different practice settings serving really complicated patients. And what Dr. Keller did, which I think lends some real strength to the project, was very intentionally pick a lot of different and diverse partners to be able to ensure that our care coordination efforts would stand across a wide variety of diverse partners. So whether that was an FQHC, a system like Kaiser, a more rural practice, which would potentially have challenges with respect to distance and accessing things like home care and DME. These are all components that in the design, we were so lucky to have Dr. Keller's leadership in thinking about the value of that kind of partnership model, which also made Colorado's project unique in many ways by contrast to the projects at other children's hospitals. So we learned a lot from just what it takes to interact with different kinds of practice settings and practice models.
Yeah, I think that was one of the more interesting parts. And of course, if you look at a lot of the other children's hospitals around the country, they all owned primary care networks. And so they, that when they were rolling this out, it went out to the physicians who were employed by their practice. We didn't do that. And so the physicians we worked with really worked for, as Heidi said, a variety of different structures. Those relationships are ongoing. And that's been, for us, one of the big pluses because we pretty quickly realized that we weren't going to be able to do this alone. Actually, this is your data. I'll share one of my favorite bits of data from our analysis. That when we got the first bit of claims data we got was 2011 to 2014. All of the kids who are medically complex, who CRG grouper rose to the above 5B level, the 5B to 9 level around the state. And we asked the folks doing the analysis, which was Truven, that was the contractor, to plot that on a map of Colorado. And I've been using this map a lot when I'm talking to people about how widespread the how these kids live all over the state, and you can actually see it on the map. The other thing is that in the Medicaid system, there were, I think, 32,000 kids who met the criteria for medically complex. So I mentioned before our special care clinic, which really does have a focus on this population and does a lot of work with them, I think pretty quickly realized that they could not provide primary care to 32,000 children around the state of Colorado, that it really changed our focus, not changed our focus, but made us realize that a focus on figuring out who we were going to partner with to do this right was the right way to go. And that was a kind of a straightforward but really profound analysis that I think we still carry with us when we're talking about what are the needs of the state. You know, we're an organization that tries to be serving the kids of this state and the region, and having that and recognizing that we need to partner to do that has been good for us. Right? I'm looking at Heidi, right?
Yep.
This is a good thing.
That's a resounding yes.
I think that 32,000 number is really surprising to me. I wouldn't have guessed that we had that many children in the state that would have risen to that level of complexity. That's a lot of children with very high needs.
Yep.
So you talk about partnering with these different clinics in different settings, these really diverse clinics across the state. Was creating sort of a care coordination model that would work in all of those different settings, was that one of the primary goals of your project, or was that something that kind of came up as you were getting into the nuts and bolts of putting this in place?
Yeah, no, we knew that was what we were going to need to do, and that one size, you know, that a care coordinator located inside a hospital was going to have to function differently if they were going to function within a practice, and that each practice would likely do it differently. But we tried to come up with some common themes. Like I said, we had that, the strength of the project was having that change package that we could offer as things that we can train your folks up to. And that's going to continue to serve us well. Especially now, frankly, that served as the model as to what we are building into our electronic health record as what's now called a longitudinal plan of care, and other components that are going to allow us to manage kids with these kinds of chronic diseases more effectively in the future. So we knew we were going to have to do that. We didn't know exactly what it was going to look like. And I think the final product looks different than we would have guessed it looked on day one. And I think that was true for every site. But we knew that was the piece we knew we were going to have to do.
So is this now this model, you said it's now being integrated into your EHR as this longitudinal piece.
Mm-hmm.
So this is being rolled out now. Is it going out to a broader number of clinics? So the clinics that were involved in this award still using this? I mean, or is this turning into, so many of those CMMI awards tend to fund something for a few years and then there's no real ability to keep it going. And it sounds like you guys have created a really effective means of improving care coordination. I'm just wondering if it's continuing to roll out or what's happening with the program now.
It is continuing to roll out, and the best thing that I can point to demonstrate that being factual is as we begin to build out our Healthy Planet module within Epic, the longitudinal plan of care is built into that care coordination module, and those practices that are interfacing with us on our instance of Epic are have access to and are receiving training on the utilization of the longitudinal plan of care. So it is very much being incorporated into the formal process by which the hospital itself and the hospital in conjunction with its primary care partners approaches care coordination.
We're also creating a new position that's about to be filled within our subspecialty practice to take the lessons learned in care coordination from the primary care setting and match them with the care coordination that's done in the specialty care setting so that we have a seamless continuum of care across the, going from the inpatient through the specialty care, through the primary care, and out into the community. We're also talking to CDPHE because, of course, this may be a little off to the side, but for years, our states had a Title V program called HCP that does a lot of care coordination. And we are matching our care coordination stuff with their care coordination stuff. Turns out they're not that dissimilar, and trying to make it so that we really have a seamless coordination of care across the continuum. And Heidi's, one of Heidi's dreams, I think, is to bring this out into schools, which is the other big place where children receive lots of care. Certainly our medically complex children do, and we're talking to and trying to figure out how to extend this even into that space.
Yep, that's exactly right. I would say if there was anything I wish we could go back and change about that initial phase of the project, which, you know, we'll remedy going forward, is the inclusion of a school-based health center provider in the project. When you think about these complicated kids, right, the list of conditions being managed is considered stunning. When you think about those kids, you know, some of them are being served in school settings, and their needs are being met by a combination of school health nurse professionals, special ed instructors, and paras. And there's an increasing opportunity to approach those situations differently to improve care for the kids in those settings as well.
You know, here at Civic, and some of the work we've been doing for other projects, we had an opportunity to take a look at sort of what that per member per month cost was in school-based health centers, and we're dumbfounded at the range of costs that we were seeing in school-based health centers. There were some of the school-based health centers in this state that have got per member per month costs that are easily 5 and 6 times the statewide average for children. So I'm really excited to see what sort of that next phase becomes, as you guys are really trying to coordinate across those different systems, because the school-based health centers are a huge part of ensuring these children actually get the care that they need to be able to function. So that's a really exciting next step to hear.
Yeah, we're very much in agreement with you, and not just in the school-based health center space. I mean, for districts and schools that are lucky enough to have bricks and mortar structure to serve student health needs, that's a strength to be able to operate from. But for schools and districts that don't have that resource, we similarly want to figure out how to be working differently with those who are meeting kids' health needs in the school building without a school-based health center attached, and, you know, fulfilling on things like least restrictive environment needs and educational components on top of just managing things like G-tubes.
Just little things like that, you know.
Right, little minor.
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the other things to come out of this project is, as we got used to thinking about the patients not by disease category necessarily, but by complexity category, that kind of thinking is now getting inculcated into our organization. We've taken that 9-category thing that I explained, the CRGs. We decided 9 was too many. And so we've collapsed that into 4 categories and using the CRGs as a basis. And so now when I walk into my clinic every Wednesday and I pull up my schedule, it has a risk score next to the patient's name, a 1 through 4, telling me which are my high risk patients so I can spot them and say, oh, we need to make sure that the care coordinator's here at 3 o'clock because that's when Johnny's coming in who has, you know, he's pretty complicated, and it'd be helpful for having her stop by then. We also realized that's when we realized that the CRG risk score was good, but not great, I guess is the right way to put it. And this has been another interesting conversation along the way. The other organization that CMMI funded to do a very similar kind of work was Denver Health back in the beginning of the decade. And they also used a CRG-based risk score and realized that there were 2 things that needed to be added, really, to help understand the nature of that risk. Something about the behavioral health needs of the child and something about the the social complexity of that child. And that led us to think, how do we bring those things in? So we've been trying. We've created a behavioral health registry within Epic and then use that to try to tweak. If you have certain items in the registry, we'll tweak you to a higher level of risk and our risk scoring. And we also started screening our kids using a 14-item social risk screener that took a while to develop. That was not really part of this project, but happened in parallel to this project. And we're now using input from that screener, which is being entered into Epic, to modify risk so that we have, so we and our care coordinators have a better idea of what's going on. And all of that information is being incorporated into that longitudinal plan of care that you talked about. So it's really, we're patting ourselves on the back. We're becoming pretty sophisticated about how to do this. And I think that's going to serve us well as we move forward.
Yeah, I have to say I'm pretty impressed. you definitely have impressed us over here. But you know, the challenges around the behavioral health and social determinants kind of brings me to my next question, which is, what were some of the biggest challenges or stumbling blocks that you guys encountered getting this project up and running and over the course of the 3 years of the program? I like to wrap up with the easy questions.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that easy question. Well, I see we're at time. So, I think, you know, one is that we were trying to be data driven and while Civic is great and we love you and thank you for letting us have the data, the fact that we're working off of claims data that has a lag has been, is challenging. And, you know, when we're trying to make changes in real time, even a 6 month lag is hard. And as many of your audience will know, there's a gap in the Medicaid data because Medicaid changed its billing system around last year. And so there's been about a 12-month period where we haven't been getting, you know, we were trying to rig this so we were getting new Medicaid data every quarter so that we could try to drive change. And we were going along at good steam, and then all of a sudden we hit that glitch. So we hadn't had any new data since the end of 2016, I think. And now we've just gotten some data through 2017, which I mentioned earlier, and that's great. But, you know, that glitch, which I think is unavoidable whenever you're dealing with big data sources, really hampered us because we lost some of our data that was driving change. And so that was a setting up that data stream so that it was coming in took some time, and we've got it working, and then that hit us, and that made it a little challenging. We still had internal metrics to go with. As I mentioned, we also evaluated patient experience and things like that, so we had those things to go off of, but it would have been nice to have a steady stream of claims data throughout all of that. There were a couple of things that we're still puzzling over. One of them was when we compare us, the nice thing about being in a 10-state collaborative is you get to look at other people's data too. And yeah. One of the things that's different in our state is our investment in home health care. Our cost of hospitalizations here was actually lower than in most of the other states. I think it was only about 25% of the total spend on these kids, whereas in many states it was about 40%. And that was mirrored, or the flip side to that was that our spend on home health was a lot higher than in other states. And we're still not quite sure what that means because we don't own home health. We don't, you know, that's all done by other agencies, and we need to learn more about that. I think that's told us that as we keep moving forward in this space, we're going to need pretty good partners. We're going to need, at bare minimum, good partnerships with home health agencies. And it's even made us wonder whether we need to extend our care into that space or not, because that seems to be such an important part of managing these kids. So that was a little surprising. And then the other thing that was interesting is over time, we noticed that a big chunk of the total spend was listed as going to mental health and substance abuse services. And we thought that was weird because we weren't getting the data from the behavioral health organizations, which we always think of as the people who are primarily providing care in this space. And so we queried that. What they were doing at Truven was any claim that had a behavioral health diagnosis attached to it So even a medical claim, like me, if I was seeing a kid with asthma and I put down depression as a second diagnosis, for example, that would show up as a mental health claim. And it really made us, for the last 2 years of the project, realize that we really needed better data about what's going on in mental health, the mental health space here. And so you all know we've been working on that, but that's been a challenge because the behavioral health organizations, because mental health and Medicaid is a carve out in this state, and that made it really hard to get that data, and we were never able to fully do so. Although I hear that we're finally getting there. So, but I think, you know, that is critical for any project going forward in the Medicaid space, is we have to have a better handle on both on the utilization and the problems of mental health that are going on. So those are the big blocks, some of the blocks I can think of. I don't know if there's others you want to talk on.
Yeah, there's only really one other that I thought was really fairly interesting and gets to the heart of what is so hard about supporting this patient population and their caregivers. We had a fair amount of support built into the project with respect to parent engagement. So working really hard to be responsive to parents' perception with respect to what we were providing by way of resource and care coordination. And in several cases, even after providing a whole lot better line of sight to the parent into how to access care and where to access what at appropriate times, the default in moments of panic to overutilize the ED was still a very difficult component of the project to manage differently. When you're talking about parents who have a very hard job of taking care of a complicated child for a decade or more, not having access to that and expecting them to flip their behavior in moments of crisis quickly isn't realistic. And so, really understanding that the commitment that those of us engaged in this work have to make to supporting parents and ultimately their decision making in moments of crisis is just as important as how providers are communicating with one another and the way that care is being delivered.
Yeah, I'll put that, I'll just to add on to that. I think we found when we had parents engaged in the project at all levels, from planning down to implementation to everything, the more parent involvement we had, the better. But we also really saw how hard it is for parents, particularly parents of kids with special health care needs, to stay engaged. They have full-time jobs already, more than that. And we had to change our language a little, because we were always talking about providing care coordination. And I think now we talk about providing care coordination support, because the parent is the care coordinator. No question about that. And the best, you know, any help we can give them is a good thing. But they are the stars of this show in so many ways.
Thank you, guys. This has been amazing. I am in awe of what you managed to accomplish with 1 3-year undertaking. It sounds like there's been a lot of insights and a lot of future direction been established with this one grant. And I just wanted to thank both of you for taking the time to speak with us today. And thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. It's been fun.